We appreciate you being with us. Damian Barling here. Very happy to be back at 12 o'clock here on the Lowdown. Spending a couple of days, spent Monday and Friday in the afternoon slot, but very, very happy to be back here with you at 12 o'clock. Be with you here all week, all the way up until Friday, which I'll do Friday. I'll move to 3 o'clock, do my first show with D.C. Oh, Christy, I'm excited about that. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for all of the interaction there and the previous conversation regarding the use of medical marijuana or the use of marijuana, I guess, in general in the National Football League, you know, with the collective bargaining agreement coming up in 2020. It's going to be a conversation. And hopefully it appears, you know, given that we're 3 years away from now, don't get it twisted. The NFL can amend the collective bargaining agreement now as long as the Players Association agrees to it. But it's good to know that for the first time, the NFL appears to be open to working with the Players Association regarding creating some sort of use for medical marijuana. And I say that's a good thing because it's something that players and activists of marijuana have long, long pushed for. Had a number of people on there just a few moments ago. I've had people call through a good chunk of the last 30 minutes sharing their experiences with marijuana as a pain management tool, which is what the NFL is looking at. And they're very clear in that. In the statements that were leaked to the Washington Post, they're very clear about we want to study the use of marijuana as a pain management tool. It's amazing. You know, we've heard, we heard Mark say a few minutes ago, we heard Aaron say when he called just a little bit ago that pills, Vicodin, things like that. I've heard so many people who have had, you know, various surgeries. Well, I had a conversation with someone a couple of days ago over at the country station. She had her wisdom teeth pulled. They couldn't take the pain medicine that came with it because of how they felt. I've only taken pain medicine once, and it was actually the same thing. I had all four wisdom teeth pulled. And I was working at KSFM at the time, and I was also studying to get my bachelor's degree. So I had to get my teeth pulled. I managed to go to work the next day and do a show, which doing a show on 102 is significantly different than doing a show on 1140. And that I don't have to talk very often. I can get through it because you just talk for short increments at a time. I can't imagine having my teeth pulled today, my wisdom teeth pulled today, and then doing a 3-hour show tomorrow. Totally different format. And I remember thinking when I got off work, like, man, I got to ease off. I can't take any pain meds because I have to write this paper for my class. And, dude, when I found out what those pain meds were covering up for the first time, I started drinking those pills. I never, ever, 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 ever wanted to feel that pain again. They said take 2 every 6 hours. I was taking 4 every 4 hours because I was freaked out of feeling that way again. If you've ever had pain in your mouth, you know that's the worst pain you can feel because it encompasses your entire skull. It feels like you've been hit in the face with a baseball bat. That's what I felt like. My face was swollen. Everything was hurting. All I was eating was ice cream, pre-vegan days. I was eating cartons and cartons and cartons of ice cream. I couldn't eat anything else. Even with the pain meds. With the pain meds, I could barely move my freaking mouth. But I hear so many other people say, man, I can't do it. I can't take those. I've heard people say, I've seen objects on walls move that weren't there from taking pain medicine. All I knew is that pain medicine covered up pain that I desperately did not want to ever, 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 ever feel again. So I can understand how someone can get hooked on pain meds, especially when they eliminate the pain. I told you, the prescription was very clear, 2 every 6 hours. I'll pass. Or maybe it was 1 every 6 hours. And I started taking 2. Whatever it was, I doubled up what the bottle said and shortened the window, because I wasn't going to allow that pill to expire like I let it do earlier. So I can understand if you're a football player and you're like, man, I got to train today. or we got practice today, we got pads today, we got New England coming up this weekend, or we're on to Cincinnati, or whatever the case may be, I got to be out there Sunday. Double them up, triple them up. We've heard significantly worse, by the way, in the NFL. Again, guys just drinking those things. Take them down. I got to feel better. I got to be able to play. I don't want to feel that pain. How much damage can you do to yourself when you don't feel it? Like, if you're legitimately popping a ton of pain meds, could you realistically, again, this is a question, not a statement, could you realistically tear an MCL or an ACL and, I don't know something is wrong, but not necessarily know? Could you pull a muscle? Could you rip a hamstring? Could you do something like that and just not know because you're so hopped up on pain meds? I'm always amazed by guys who come back the next week and are playing with a broken something or another. Playing with a torn this or a torn that. Tiger, 2008, didn't even want to acknowledge how he got through it. What did he have? A broken leg in that 2008 U.S. Open, the last major he ever won? We played that extra day against Rocco. He was asked directly, how did you get through this? What did you do? Looked right at the guy and smiled and said, I just got through it. I did what I had to do. We knew what that meant, right? A needle, some pills, whatever it was. He was going to get through that U.S. Open. He was going to get through that major. So I can understand the addiction to it. And the addiction to pain meds, we know, isn't safe. I don't know so much about marijuana, though. And I guess that's what this study that the NFL and the NFL Players Association is working towards or willing to work together on is all about. Let's find out. Let's figure it out. Again, it appears to be a positive first step. There's a lot of waters they got to navigate, as was pointed out a few minutes ago. How do you navigate the federal laws? Is the federal law going to change anytime soon? State laws are different. It's not all states. It's weird how we have state. It's amazing to me that the people of California voted to make marijuana legal in this state, but it's still against the federal law. How does that work? I guess I didn't pay close enough attention in my U.S. government class and all in all the politic classes, U.S. politics I studied. I didn't pay close enough attention. Because I still find that incredible. Now, you know what? Yeah, we don't really like this federal law, so we're just going to change it on our own. That's how we roll here in CA. We're on the coast, baby. People want to live here. It's what we do. Speaking of California, the Olympics are coming in 11 years, 2028. The Olympics are coming. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this as I wrapped things up yesterday. Sometime in the 6 o'clock hours, I was wrapping things up yesterday in that afternoon show. And is that, like, when you look at recent Olympic cities, don't, like, at what point do we acknowledge, all right, you know what, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, they start to look around and think, you know, maybe we need to make some changes, right? Remember Boston? Boston was in the running for 2024. Boston said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. We'll pass. We're good. You have major cities in the United States of America saying, nah, player, I'll pass. I'm good. Don't need it. With the Olympics, there are some negatives that come with it. I mean, look at Rio. Look at Beijing. Look at all of the money Beijing put into those Olympics in 2008. That's just money they swallowed. IOC gave them some, not nearly enough. When you look at some of those, you look at that bird's nest where the Olympic Stadium was, when you look at that aquatic center that was lighting up on the outside, look at all the high-tech stuff China put into that. They spent way more money than the IOC gave them. Way more. So what's Los Angeles going to do? Los Angeles is going to have a relatively fresh football staff. It'd be about a decade old, I guess, by the time the Olympics get here. You have a number of venues. Traffic is going to be, goodness gracious, traffic is going to be awful. They better get some sort of subway system or something built in Los Angeles before 2028. But if you're in Los Angeles, that is something even you in California. By the way, you know that's going to affect our taxes because it's the state of California. It's not like people in Los Angeles are just going to be taxed. It's going to change the look of our tax structure here in, I don't know, couple elections away. A couple of those midterms away, you're going to start seeing some bills that are going to leave you scratching your head like, wait, what is this for? You're going to have to start doing research from when some of these props pop up. I think the government should be forced to tag every single prop or bill that is related to the 2028 Olympics as an Olympic bill. You need to know what this is. We're asking for more money because it needs to go to Los Angeles because we're expecting an influx of traffic in 11 years or in 10987654 whenever that bill comes out. We're expecting an influx of traffic. We need more hotels. We need more this. We need more that. We need more A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. We're going to need all that. So we're going to turn to the millions of residents of the great state of California. Enjoy that. But I guess as it gets closer, it'll be fun. I mean, it hasn't been, what was it, 1996? That was the last time it was here. Should we have fixed 2002 Winter Olympics were here? Where was that, Utah? Should we have fixed venues? Like, every Summer Olympics is in this place, and every Winter Olympics is in this place. That way you don't have, well, the obvious corruption of the IOC. And you don't have these countries just bankrupting themselves in an attempt to be at the world's stage, to be the center of the world stage. Where would you, like, I don't know, Athens? That's the birthplace of the Olympics, right? All right. Who doesn't want to go to, what athlete wouldn't want to go to the birthplace of the Olympics? Athens, Greece. Why not hold every single Olympics there? Every single Summer Olympics hold in Athens. Winter, I don't know, Vancouver? Somewhere cold, somewhere where there's plenty of snow. Somewhere where you get all the events in. I feel like that would make more sense. But we want to spread the wealth. Even Roger Goodell today was talking about someone asked him if he'd consider doing another open-air stadium for the Super Bowl like they did with New York a few years back. Now, I lived in New York when the Super Bowl was there, and I cannot express to you enough how lucky the NFL got by that game getting off without a hitch in February. I remember it being cold, and I also remember 2 days later, a massive snowstorm hit the Northeast. Forgot what they call it, like Northeasterners or something like that. That's what they call the storms out there. They have a name for them. There's just giant snowstorms. They missed it by 2 days. Pretty much everybody who was there got out. But if it had come the day before, there would have been a whole lot of people stuck. Now, the NFL people wouldn't have been stuck because their offices are in New York. So it's convenient for them. Fans would have been stuck. Officials from other teams would have been stuck. And then imagine if it had taken place the day before. Players, yeah, whatever. They'll play in the snow. Players ain't worried about it. They may not particularly like it. And it may favor one team over the other. But how are the fans going to feel? You paid God knows how many thousands of dollars for your ticket to be at the Super Bowl, and you're out there freezing your ass off. So even Roger Goodell was like, yeah, I don't think so. I'm not really sure how I feel about this open-air cold weather place. Now, they could do it in cold weather places, Minnesota. Minnesota's almost certainly going to get a Super Bowl. What is that, U.S. Bank Stadium? What would it, whatever their new place is in downtown Minnesota. They'll get a Super Bowl. They got a Super Bowl. It's coming. But it's closed. Atlanta's building a new stadium. Of course, that's a warm weather place. But they got a roof on it. But that's a warm weather place. They're getting a Super Bowl. But if you're in one of those, it's a shame. Green Bay will never have a Super Bowl. One of the best fan bases in the entire country for any sport. But they just don't have the infrastructure to host a Super Bowl. If you went out to Super Bowl 50 when it was in San Francisco, Super Bowl was in Santa Clara, most of the festivities were in San Francisco. That was a lot to pull off, even here. I mean, most of the people who were working in Santa Clara were staying in San Francisco. Most of the TV sets that you saw set up through the week were set right there along the bay. It was kind of a unique situation in that the game was held in one city, but the festivities were taking place some, 45 minutes away without traffic. But they were able to pull it off. Not everybody could pull that off. So I would expect most Super Bowls to be Los Angeles, Phoenix. I mean, Los Angeles is certainly going to get one when that stadium goes up. But even Roger Goodell noted, we're just going to rotate. Maybe you don't have a fixed venue for the Summer Olympics. Maybe you rotate it. Maybe you have an Athens, Greece. I mean, hell, Los Angeles pulled it off in 1984. It's not like it didn't destroy the city. It's never destroyed a city when it's been held in this country. Boston didn't want to deal with the headache. They gave a hard pass, that's fine. But Atlanta did well with it. It's not like Atlanta suffered since then. But it's these other countries that put every dollar that they have, and many of which that they don't, into building these stadiums, building these arenas, building these venues, and then when the Olympics are over, then what? It's a waste of money for everybody involved. The venues in Los Angeles will already be there. Los Angeles isn't going to be suffering in 2030 because they hosted the Olympics in 2028. But Rio is. Beijing suffered for years. That was 2008. That was almost a decade ago, and they're still suffering from it. So what about that? What about we pick different venues, right? We rotate it, kind of like we do the Super Bowl. We rotate the Super Bowl, but we kind of rotate it amongst the same places. All right, let's go. Let's go Los Angeles. Los Angeles has proven they could do it. They did it in 1984. Do it here in 2028. We got Paris in 2024, Tokyo in 2020. Those are all places that can pull it off. Throw in Athens. I know Sydney had a tremendous Olympics in, was that 2000? So they had a great Olympics. Maybe you throw them in. Maybe it's not a rotation of three. Maybe it's five. But stop putting these countries in a position to where they're bidding for it. Thank you, Marty from Philly. It's a nor'easter. That's what they call snowstorms. In the Northeast, it's a nor'easter. Now, I've told you my experience living there in the Northeast. They're very particular. You got to say things a certain way or they get mad at you. And you don't even know they're mad at you. They just stare at you. And you wonder why the hell this person is staring at you. See, Marty from Philly knows. He's been out east. It's a different world out there. If you've never lived out east or spent a significant time out east, it's such a different animal. It's why when you watch shows, of like California is so related to, like, what's the first thing if you tell people you're from California? You don't even tell them where you're from, whether it's Sacramento, San Francisco, wherever it is. They'd be like, oh, bruh, surfer, right, dude? Like, no, dude, I don't live in the beach. I live in the freaking capital of the state, bro. But that's what it's associated with. When I think of people in Northeast, like, when you think of people in the Northeast, you think of that, like, thick act. It's amazing. New York and Boston are, like, miles from each other. Like, they're not that far from each other at all. But there's two completely different accents that come from people within those two states. And Connecticut, where I lived, is like a hybrid of both. So you get people with that New York accent. You get people with that Boston accent. And it's truly extraordinary that they're, I don't know, depending on what part of the state you're on, 100 miles apart. At least Massachusetts, at least to the state of New York. Yeah, not that far apart. Two entirely different accents. Two entirely different ways of living. Northeast is a weird place, man. There's no doubt about it. It's a weird place. I love California. I love being back in California. I love being back home. And I love that the Olympics are going to be here. I'm excited for that. One thing I know a lot of you don't love, and that's the fact that Sonny Gray is gone. He's moved on to the New York Yankees. Nothing surprising there. It's something as the Major League Baseball trade deadline passed yesterday. That was the name we kept hearing. We knew Sonny Gray was closely tied to the New York Yankees. We kept hearing that potentially there would be something with the Los Angeles Dodgers. By the way, there is a fantastic article on Yahoo right now that details how the Yu Darvish trade got done. I mean, it's really extraordinary work, and it's kind of comical in a sense. Because essentially the Rangers, hey, guys, what you doing? Got about 20 minutes to go. What you want to do? Which is the kiss of death. If a team with a commodity is calling to trade that person, that commodity suddenly becomes a whole lot less valuable. I'll give you some of the highlights of that article. Again, really, really good stuff from Yahoo regarding the final moments leading into the trade that sent Yu Darvish to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I know, as bad as the San Francisco Giants are, and by the way, the Giants passed the Phillies yesterday as having the worst record in all of baseball. So imagine that. Imagine where we are this year with the San Francisco Giants. And then think back to last year, but the roughly second half of the season, how bad the Giants truly have been. By far now they have the worst record in baseball this season. By far the worst record in baseball over the last season and a half. If you're a Giants fan, are you comfortable this thing can turn around? And if you're a Giants fan, you have to be annoyed to no end that Yu Darvish wound up with the Dodgers. And I can completely understand that. That's as bad as your team may be, you never want the rival to win. I completely understand that. That is totally logical thinking from a sports fan. We suck. We're not going to win, but I sure as hell don't want you to win. And the Dodgers, before you, you know, the Dodgers, have they lost since Clayton Kershaw went out? Was that a week ago? Like a week and a half ago? I don't think they've lost since he went out. Now, I'm always hesitant to, you know, when starting pitchers go out, one every five games. So we can really talk about what does this Yu Darvish deal mean to a team that is already 74-31 right now, already has the best record in Major League Baseball by a rather comfortable margin. What does this mean? Well, it means some of the pressure may come off Clayton Kershaw when playoff time gets here. We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll get into what's going on around NFL training camps as a number of team practices. There were some scuffles in Foxborough today. We got that for you as well as we continue here with the lowdown on Sports 1140. The 1140 Street Team, sponsored by Loyal Roots, will be at Buffalo Wild Wings tonight. Come find the 1140 tent for awesome prizes. That is from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight. Buffalo Wild Wings, 1168 Galleria Boulevard in Roseville. Coincides quite nicely with the Oakland A's game that is going on tonight. Obviously, no Sonny Gray, no longer a Sonny Gray. I know with Chicago winning the World Series last year, with the Cubs winning the World Series, I'm not sure what you can really – now, again, I'm talking about when I say – don't misconstrue this word when I say root for. But when you talk about stories, like we knew last year, and I openly admit this all the time on this show, I root for the story. Like when it was Cleveland and Golden State, I rooted for Cleveland because I thought Cleveland would have been so much more of a good story. This year, I was rooting for Cleveland again because I thought it'd be another big story. You add Kevin Durant to the Golden State Warriors and they still lose. Little did I know that the Warriors beating the Cavs has brought us an entire offseason of stories. But when you talk about stories in Major League Baseball, when you talk about stories heading into the World Series, is there a better one out there than a potential matchup between the Dodgers and the Yankees? And by the way, I noted this yesterday. I know we've talked about the Yankees all year long. We've talked about what they've done. And oh, by the way, my man J-Ross isn't here. J-Ross, this is for you. What the hell is judgian mean? Is that even a word? Did he just make that? Jason, I know he felt it. He just rolled over in his grave. I know it. He just turned right over. Wherever Jason Ross is at, he vomited because he knows I just played that for him. What does judgian mean? But anyways, the point was, the Yankees versus the Dodgers, that's sexy, right? The Cubs winning was a huge story. It ended 103, whatever. It ended, right? It's like, okay, what now? Like, if the Cubs win again this year, does it... Like, I don't feel like it was a big deal when the Red Sox won their second one. And when the Red Sox... It became a big deal when the Red Sox won their third one because it was like, oh, okay, they lost for a century. Now suddenly they're a dynasty. But when you talk about stories in baseball, a sexy story heading into the postseason would have to be the Dodgers versus the Yankees, right? That hasn't happened since the 70s, 78, something like that. Hasn't happened for a long time, whatever it is. Hasn't happened in my lifetime, I know that. So each of those teams took a step yesterday to get just that much better. Yankees obviously went out and got Sonny Gray from the Oakland A's. Gave up three of their top 12 prospects. One of them has a torn-up knee. One of them outfield with a torn-up knee. The other one's coming off Tommy John surgery. Okay, I think they fared pretty well in that deal. Not nearly as well as the Los Angeles Dodgers did. Because the Dodgers, they thought the trade deadline had kind of come and gone and they were just going to walk away with no one. And the old Texas came calling. Now, I've never orchestrated a trade inside of a professional sports franchise before. But I have to imagine if you have a commodity and you're the team calling out trying to trade that commodity, oh man, things aren't, it's not good. That's not good for you. The Rangers called the Dodgers 20 minutes before the deadline. Now think about this if you're the Dodgers for a second. You're 74-31 right now. That's the third best start through 105 games since World War II. It's a random stat I got from ESPN. You're sitting pretty right now. You're going to clinch the division, what, 2 weeks? You're going to clinch the division. Your ace, Clayton Kershaw, just went out, and you haven't lost a game since he's missed time. Now, you had talked to the Rangers earlier, and they insisted a deal for Darvish would have to include the Dodgers' two best prospects. Dodgers said, "No, man, I'm good. Hard pass. We're good. We got 74 wins right now." Maybe at the time they only had 71. Hard pass. We're good. We'll move along. But here you are 20 minutes before the deadline, and the Rangers come calling, and they have one of those marquee pitchers that have been out there because you knew Sonny Gray was out there. You know, you Darvish was out there, and you knew Justin Verlander was out there. Justin Verlander didn't get traded. He had some fun with that on social media yesterday. But 20 minutes before the deadline, the Rangers come calling. You don't have to give up your two best prospects anymore because they're calling you. And the Dodgers front office were able to get that done. And I know that has to drive. Are the Dodgers like the Lakers? They're just universally hated for whatever reason. I know people here dislike them because, well, a lot of people here dislike anything that has to do with Los Angeles. And of course, a lot of people here are Giants fans. So are they that? I know the Yankees are universally disliked because I think anyone who wins that much, you're universally disliked. I don't feel like the Dodgers win that often. But there's a certain, a certain thing that's attached to teams from Los Angeles. At least the marquee ones. The Dodgers are a marquee franchise. The Lakers are a marquee franchise. Clippers aren't there yet, though it sure feels like they're starting to get a lot of universal dislike, but I don't know that it has anything to do with them being from Los Angeles. That may have to do with their players. That may have to do with the fact that a lot of people feel like the Clippers are grossly overrated. But the Dodgers did a tremendous job of basically playing chicken with the Texas Rangers and able to get Yu Darvish. Now, what does that mean for them? Again, 74 wins. What does it mean for them? I don't know. Probably the regular season, it doesn't mean anything. But come postseason, it does. Because a lot of you have ripped Clayton Kershaw for his performances in the postseason. And Clayton Kershaw has pitched in the postseason on 3 days rest on four different occasions. I don't think that stat can be ignored. I don't think that stat should be ignored. I don't think it's fair that we judge Clayton Kershaw strictly on those performances in the postseason. Yu Darvish coming along. Now, granted, the last time we saw him in a Texas Rangers uniform wasn't so sexy. He got lit up pretty bad. Now, I don't see that being the case moving forward. He's obviously a quality pitcher. He was a hot commodity. There was a reason a number of teams were trying to get a number of playoff teams, playoff caliber teams, were trying to get him on their roster. What he does is he strengthens that rotation come playoff time. And a dangerous Dodgers team just got that much more dangerous. Yankees, not so much. Did they get better? Sure, of course. You had a quality pitcher like Sonny Gray. Of course you got better. But things are a whole lot tighter in the American League East. They're a whole lot tighter in the American League, period, than they are for the Dodgers out here in the NL West. Yankees could not win that division. The Yankees, they're kind of locked in with the Boston Red Sox as normal. The Rays aren't that far behind. You got Baltimore sniffing. Like, no one is really, I mean, what do we got, 40-some-odd games left? Maybe 50 for some teams? There are a number of teams in the American League still very, very much in the conversation. With the Dodgers, you can concede, okay, they're going to win the National League West. They'll probably have the best record in the entire National League. Yankees are a bigger question mark. By the way, are the Yankees even better than the Houston Astros? I mean, are we heading for, I mean, see, that's the thing. There's nothing sexy about the Dodgers versus the Astros. But what's the story? I guess the story there is the Dodgers finally winning something when it seems like they haven't won in a while. Sad news for Lowdown fans. I came across this today. And you have to be a lengthy time listener to get why this is sad. Crockett Gilmore suffered a cartilage tear in his knee, and he's out for the season. No Crockett Gilmore this season. That's devastating for us. That's devastating for fans of the Lowdown. No Crockett Gilmore. Backup tight end for Baltimore Ravens. Just gut-wrenching. I know that's kind of a long-term joke. If you were with us around the Super Bowl, you probably get the Crockett Gilmore joke. Patriots is getting into it. There was some scuffling, man. Bill Belichick does not tolerate fighting during practice, which I love. I tend to lean a lot closer to that. Jason Garrett, the other coach of the Dallas Cowboys, said the other day, you'd rather have to dial it back than constantly have to light a fire under these guys. That's what Jason Garrett said when some of his players continuously got into scuffles during the second practice of training camp. Bill Belichick is having none of that, even with some of his big names. We'll let you know what happened. Plus, we'll give you an update on a Charger story we talked about yesterday. Cooler heads prevailed. Philip Rivers, Antonio Gates going to go get to see their boy LT going to the Hall of Fame? We got that for you next here on Sports 1140. NFL training camps are underway. I think the Raiders are wrapping up practice right now. I think they went 11 to 130 today. If we get any sound out of today's practice, we will absolutely bring it to you. Obviously, nothing of major note happened as we haven't gotten any urgent emails about something that happened at practice or any sort of tweets from people there at practice. But if we get anything out of what went on in Napa today, I know Ken Rudolph was in Napa for Good Day Sacramento. I got to see Ken yesterday. In addition to doing 3 to 7 show yesterday here on the radio, I was able to go on Good Day Sacramento and spend a few minutes with Ken, man. And let me tell you something. I've always marveled at the schedule Ken kept when he was here, because he would, you know, wake up at, you know, just literally, he'd wake up at a time a lot of us were going to bed. Right after a good night out, he'd wake up at 2:45, get up, watch news. When he was doing the radio stuff here, he'd watch, you know, whatever sports he had to catch up on. Then he'd go in and he'd do network news and he'd do Good Day Sacramento. What was pretty amazing is I got there just before 7 o'clock, spent some time with Courtney Dempsey. Ken wasn't there. Ken was doing the news anchor stuff. And I didn't get to see him till right before I went out and did the segment that I did, in which I was making cookies, because, of course, that's what I do. I make cookies. Totally legit, right? The guy you listen to on the radio for sports talk makes vegan cookies on Good Day Sacramento. Totally legit. I see Ken for just a brief second in the green room. He's like, I'll be right back. I'm finishing up, you know, the news desk stuff, and then I'll be right over. And then the producer comes and gets me and says, okay, it's time to, you know, we'll come out. Courtney will come over. We'll do this. We'll get a shot. We'll do a tease and all that stuff. And Ken comes from one side of, like, a building into the other, sits down, and is immediately caught up on everything that's been going on Good Day Sacramento. He's been off doing something entirely different, but he sits down at the desk right before we're about to do the segment together and is completely caught up on everything, man. That guy works his ass off. And watching him in his television element yesterday was a lot of fun, and I had a great time. I didn't obviously get to spend as much time with him as I would have liked to, because it's a live television show. It's not like you could just sit down and hang out for a while like we do when we're in here, but it was great to spend a little bit of time with him and Courtney Dempsey as well. And you can log on to, I think it's Good Day Sac or GoodDaySacramento.com, and catch some of the video of what we were able to do yesterday. Ken hasn't changed a bit. He's still a hater. Tried to hate him on cookies, but he showed me a little bit of love. He actually acknowledged that they weren't too bad. That's kind of where he went with them. They weren't too bad. So, Ken, I appreciate that. One thing that is bad, it's the Dallas Cowboys. Everything I think associated with the Cowboys in training camp so far is bad. And I love the Cowboys. Jason Garrett said, you'd rather have to dial it back than to constantly have to light a fire under these guys. When he was asked the question about, man, you guys are fighting a lot here during training camp. It's only a couple of days in. You okay with that? Like, I'm not. Like, what are you fighting during camp for? I get it's a physical sport, but, dude, chill. Like, it's practice. Those are your teammates, man. Relax. Bill Belichick having none of it. He doesn't care who you are. Reports out of Patriots practice today, he threw Stephon Gilmore and Julian Edelman out because they got into it after an incompletion in the end zone during a drill. So they get into a scuffle. Bill says, nah, man. Or as Ken would say, nah, player. Hit the showers. Wouldn't you want to follow that model? Like, wouldn't you, if you're a coach in the NFL, now I'm not saying, who else did it? Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin said this, I think it was last year, how he wanted guys to be really physical. He wanted guys to hit hard during training camp. If you're a fan of a, like, do you want that? Like, if you're a Raiders fan, if you're a 49ers fan, well, let's take the 49ers out of the equation here for a second. If you're a team that has high aspirations coming into the season, it's the Raiders do. Seems the Pittsburgh Steelers do every year. Obviously, the New England Patriots do as well. Do you want your team going hard during training camp? I know every time I see there must have been 3 or 4 fights on, like, the second day of Cowboys camp. In pads, when they were in pads. Like, dude, what are you fighting? Like, stop. Like, when are y'all going to tear your ACL? You're going to get hurt. Then Jerry's going to have to go out in front of the media and say something stupid, because that's what he does. Me personally, I'll pass. That's a hard pass for me. Mike Tomlin was all in on it last year. Let's go hard, man. We hit. We hit during camp. This is how we get ready for the season, right? We hit hard during the season. We got to hit hard during camp. Man, players don't want that. Now, I get some of the players trying to make the roster. They might want that. But overall, players don't want that. Here's a follow-up to something that we had yesterday. The Chargers. You know, LaDainian Tomlinson is going into the Hall of Fame on Friday. Hall of Fame game, of course, is on Thursday. We will have it for you beginning at 4:30. The Cowboys, I just spoke of, against the Arizona Cardinals. LaDainian Tomlinson going into the Hall of Fame, part of that class, along with the Jerry Jones that I just mentioned there, in Canton, Ohio. All right. Well, two of his longtime teammates, Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates, they'd like to be there to cheer him on, but they have a practice in Los Angeles, California. And apparently this isn't just a normal practice. This is a big deal if you ask the Chargers, because they're having an open practice at StubHub, which is the 30,000-some-odd seat venue that they're going to be playing their games at. They consider this to be a big deal. And Anthony Lynn has taken the stance that he doesn't want Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates to go. He thinks it's important that they stay back for that scrimmage. And meet the fans. Do all the meet and greets. Do all the autographs. Do all the waving. I mean, what are they really going to do during that scrimmage? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But the bottom line is Anthony Lynn wants him there. I think that's a... I get it. I can absolutely get both sides of the perspective. I can get both sides. I can get Anthony Lynn saying, hey, man, this is a big deal for us. We're trying to establish a foothold here in Los Angeles. We're already a year behind the Rams. And the fact is, these people here in Los Angeles, they don't like us or the Rams. They like the Raiders. So we got to make them like us somehow. I don't know how we're going to do it, because we're in the same division, so they're already preconditioned to hate us. But somehow we got to get 30,000 people to come to our game every week, and we got to multiply that when we open up the new stadium in a year. So we need you here. I can understand Anthony Lynn and the Chargers taking that stance. But if I'm Anthony Lynn, do you want to draw that hard line as your first kind of order of business? As the Chargers coach, do you want to draw that hard and fast line with guys as respected, particularly as Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates? Both of them tremendously respected across the league. Are you sure you want to draw that line now? LaDainian Tomlinson, a network analyst for the NFL Network. And look, it's not the end of the world that they can't be there. But this is more a... This has a little bit less to do, in my opinion, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like this has a little less to do with Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates, and has a lot more to do with LaDainian Tomlinson. This is to show respect to LaDainian Tomlinson and what he did for the San Diego Chargers and the fact that he's going into the Hall of Fame. It's a tightrope, I get it, but I think Anthony Lynn is erring the wrong way here. I think those guys should be able to be there for LaDainian Tomlinson. I think that's a tip of the cap to LT by allowing these guys to go. Third and final hour of the Lowdown coming up, including what NFL teams and players are under the most pressure heading into that season. That's next.